Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Guten Tag and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. This is our Matchday 19 review. Straight out of a Hollywood script, Matchday 19 was dramatic, exciting, and very much lively to the very end. It was never easy for any of the sides, as proven by the 10 teams that are still trying to avoid being in the bottom three. There were lots of movers and shakers. And it would be fair to say that some of the fans were feeling very happy about their side's performances, even those with the rare distinction of winning away from home. And others are starting to panic that maybe who is in charge is not the person who should be leading them towards the end of the season. As always, alongside me to discuss everything that's happened in the Zweite Bundesliga is the one and only Eva Lotte-Bolle. Eva, good morning to you. Obviously, another fascinating weekend in the Zweite Bundesliga. A lot happened. There were upsets a little bit. There were a few upsets. We'll talk about those. There were some really cracking goals and one from a particular Australian who we will also talk about, which was fantastic. And one team in particular who's known for not winning away from home, surprising everybody by winning away from home.
Yeah, I apologize in advance. Winning away from home in winter, when outside it's very sunny but it's still very cold, comes with a price, as you can probably hear. So I apologize when I sound a bit nasal from time to time. It was, I think, for fans of the league, it was once again proof why we love the league, because just one result can really change the whole table. At the same time, it means for everyone in this, not even only bottom half, but like three quarters of that table, that you have to look out, that you can never rest on one or two good results, that you have to keep going. And I think we've seen this, especially this weekend again. And yeah, I mean, once again, there were games where the score sheet in the end does not reflect the game in total. And in my opinion, the first game we're going to talk about, probably the highlight spiel of the weekend, is one of the best examples.
It was certainly a fascinating game. We are talking about the prime time Saturday night fixture, and it was built up as a beauty, the Franconia derby. Greuther Fürth, Nürnberg on Saturday night. And it would be fair to say that this was a feisty game, as you would expect. There was lots of pyro. There was lots of fantastic atmosphere at the Sportpark Rohrenhof Thomas Sommer. But there would only be one winner, and that would be the hosts. A lot happened in this game, and you would have thought that maybe Fürth would have taken an early lead when there was a penalty against Florian Hübner on his challenge against Dixon Abiyama. Not initially given a penalty by referee Tobias Stieler, but with the consultation of the video assistant referee, correctly given. It might have seemed harsh on Hübner for lunging in, but failure to take possession of the ball was his undoing. Hugota, Captain True, you'd think he would score, but no. He rattles the woodwork, and Peter Vindal, who was fantastic in this game, you would have thought he actually saved it. He celebrated that thing hard and long, and, well, to be honest, he did nothing. He just dived and missed. Second half came around. Both teams had chances. Vindal made a really good save on Mikalski, and then Nürnberg looked like they'd taken the lead. A well-worked set piece found its way to on loan Schalke midfielder Florian Flick, but he was offside, and it was pretty clearly offside and correctly disallowed. Again, good use of the video assistant referee. They came close late in the second half. Enrico Valentini had arguably their best chance of the game. Andreas Linder made a fantastic reactionary save, and the game stayed nil until the very end. As the clock struck 90 minutes, Fürth would take the lead. Julian Green does so well to kind of maneuver around three Nürnberg players. The ball falls to Sebastian Gersbeck. Ragnar Ake makes the first effort, saved by Vindahl, but he didn't miss twice. Ake came on as a second-half substitute to get his third goal of the season and undoubtedly become a Greuther Fürth hero. Now, I might get clowned for saying that the town is Weiss und Grün in Franconia, but the result tells the tale of a team that, in fact, rules Franconia for at least the rest of this season. For Fürth, four wins in their first six under Alexander Zorniger. Things are on the up. They're in 10th place, but for Nürnberg, anything but. They are in absolute free fall. We said last week after their defeat to St. Pauli that they are entering the phase of chaos. They are very much in the chaos and crisis mode. And, you know, we can always have the what ifs. What if the Flick goal had counted? You know, what if Valentini had scored? And all these what if a bits about isms. But it means absolutely nothing, because at the end of the day, their inability to score as the league's worst offence, if team in the league, once again showed its head.
Yeah, and I mean, I think in a way, Fürth fans felt like it's pre-Zorniger days again, when they were the better team, but their opponent scored. All in all, although I didn't expect it much of Nürnberg, I was still disappointed. Because, I mean, in my opinion, the last 10 minutes were probably the best ones, but and only because of the offside call. But throughout the game, I mean, they could have, in my opinion, they were very lucky that they were still 11 men until the end of the game. Florian Hübner, in my opinion, should have been sent off against Asta, but obviously the VAR can't do anything here because it's not a penalty scene. It would have been a free kick and a second yellow. And this is something, it's not a straight red card, but something the VAR obviously can't intervene with. Yeah, as you mentioned, Vindahl probably the only player Nürnberg can rely on at the moment, but offensively it's... I don't really know what they're doing. Like, I mean, Florian Flick is mainly there to be their top runner around the field. Like, in his first two games, he has been like has run over 12 kilometers in both games, I think. But you have to say, Fürth increased and decreased their chances. Didn't use them very well. And there were not, it was not a typical Zorniger game, in my opinion. Like, there were some parts missing, but still they deserve to win this, and because they never gave up and put pressure on Nürnberg in this last scene. And by the way, it's the goal that Nürnberg can never concede in that way. And then we have to talk about Markus Weinzierl, because we both were very skeptical when he was put in. And, I mean, defensively, there has been some improvements, but they just don't score goals. And they did not really score goals under Robert Klaus. So, has there been a big improvement to get them out of the relegation fight? In my opinion, it is not. And I mean, we were both waiting for that, for that break, what Weinzierl is going to do, if he has some time to work on it. I think there have more question marks than before. I mean, they lost against St. Pauli, a team who hasn't won away from home all season. They lost the derby, which will pain the fans even more. And now they play Jan Regensburg on the weekend. And this is the game they want to win. because otherwise, I mean, I said it before, as well as two bad results don't mean you're automatically out, that you don't have a chance to survive. At the same time, you have to give your fans something, especially in Nuremberg, and I don't really see at the moment what's that going to be.
Yeah, I mean, his record suggests maybe improvements in the defensive end. 9 games managed, 9 goals conceded, but 7 goals scored, and a total of 9 points. There's a lot of nines in that, but you know, that's you know, they're good enough to be at least in that mid-table area. They've definitely got some good individual quality, but you look at some of the games they dropped, that the home loss to Magdeburg, we've already mentioned the St. Pauli Fürth game, you know, the draw at Rostock, they were pretty ordinary in that game as well. And obviously there's the talk of, well, you need to give them time, and this is such a delicate situation. They've got the cup game tonight against Fortuna Düsseldorf, and as you mentioned, Jan Regensburg on the weekend. They can ill afford to lose that game. It doesn't matter. Because they've got Heidenheim next week, which we don't think they'll win that game. That's in Heidenheim. And then Sandhausen at home, another tough opponent. There needs to be something. There's a massive disconnect. And obviously they've had 9 games in total, but he also had a 10-week period, 10 to 12-week period, where there was no football whatsoever to work on all of these problems. And it's the same issues. It's the same mistakes. They're not the only Bavarian team that completely shut off defensively when a ball came into the box late in the game. Like, it was such amateurish defending where Jimura just forgets. Almost like someone else is... Valentini's coming. He'll get it. He'll get Ragnar. Okay. You can't take those chances where every single point is valuable. In a game that means so much, they blew it. They blew it defensively, but that single scene wasn't really the reason why they lost. They lost because they're just not good enough. They couldn't handle Fürth's excellent pressing. They made too many mistakes in their defensive third. They put their goalkeeper under immense pressure, and despite the fact that he was up to the task 99.9% of the time, that 0.1% was more than enough for Fürth to take advantage. And we should credit Fürth because they've really, you know, they've started to pick it up. Yes, they're not scoring lots of goals. And, you know, we love to see teams score 3-4 and it be awesomely entertaining. But in a situation where it's all about results, they are getting those results. They are keeping clean sheets and they are moving themselves away from the danger area. Whether they can do that against Karlsruhe on the weekend, we'll find out. But they are very much doing the business that is required to get themselves out of danger. We should move on to some more positive noting. Let's talk about Kaiserslautern, because they had Holstein Kiel on Saturday afternoon. This was another fascinating game, and very much the stats will say that the hosts were very worthy to take the 3 points in this game, but they did it the hard way. Which seems to be the only way that they do it this season. Thus, it's entertaining for us. They were brilliant to start with. One player who's actually, I would say, maybe gone under the radar. I don't rate him particularly as a good defender, but get him in attacking situations and get him to whip a ball in, and good things happen. That's Henrik Zuk, and he was on hand to assist the opening goal. Now, some stats don't give it to him because there was a deflection, but I'm going to give it to him because that just seems the right way to go about it. His ball in was partially nicked, and it fell to Daniel Hanslick, who's actually been really good to start the second half of the season. He's in for the injured Philip Clement. He was fantastic again, and that goal would have meant so much more for him. Not only was it the first goal of the season for him, but it was against his former club, and you know that they feel very sweet when you're bereft of opportunity to come to a club. He got his chance and he took it very, very well. But they kind of self-destructed a little bit after the 1-0. They let Kiel get back in the game. Kwasi Riet had that really good opportunity on 27 minutes, his efforts striking the woodwork, but they would get the goal just 3 minutes later. It was a bit of a helter-skelter situation. Finn Porat gets the header. I have no idea how Andreas Luther does not get any of the ball. It seemed harder to not get the ball in that scene. He whiffs, and eventually the ball trickles in. There's all sorts of mass confusion, whether it's a goal, was Kwasi Riet offside when he touched the ball, all of this. The referee didn't even know what was going on. He points randomly. Luter kicks the ball away. But eventually, a clear, concise decision. It was a goal. It was quite clearly a goal. 1-1. A player we've talked about a lot this season is Terrence Boyd. Someone who maybe the US national team should probably call up because they've got no good strikers. Don't tell them that. And, he almost proved everyone right. He had a glorious opportunity early in the second half. The ball came to him at his feet, should score. Most times he would score, he misses. But he was redeemed. Great play by Opoku and Daniel Hanslick. And again, it's Zouk with such a teasing ball across the goal. Maybe Schreiber should have tried to do something. Kirkuskov was just out of the play completely. And Boyd with an easy tap in. He's got 10 goals this season. Does his trademark celebration. And they celebrate themselves to 3 more points. And they have closed the gap, more importantly, to a playoff spot. This team genuinely believes that they can do it. And again, they're the only... like, I don't know how they're doing it. Because they're very... They're a bit of a chaos team. They don't seem very traditional to what we expect of a Dirk Schuster coach side, but they've won their last 5 games. They are the informed team in the league. They've got 3 games which they will genuinely think they're a good chance in. And there's none of us predicted this was going to happen. And yet here we are, 19 match days in, and they are a point off the top 3.
Yeah, and I mean, we were talking about how important it is to come out of this, like, out of this break ready, and Kaiserslautern is ready. I mean, they look like they still do a couple of same mistakes like they did before. As you've mentioned before, Terrence Boyd could have like 5 goals more this season already, probably. But as you've mentioned before, Kaiserslautern is not only Terrence Boyd. This opportunity which Boyd misses, this combination with Zimmer and Opoku is very good football for the Zweite Liga, especially for a promoted team. And it's really, really difficult for other teams to break through their defense as well. And I mean, Kiel is probably, like, no offense, but probably not the team where we draw a line. Or we say this is the team we have to compare them to, because we have problems pointing Kiel down. Games with them are entertaining, because they normally do something you won't expect in a negative and in a positive way. In this game, I think they only had like this 10 to 15 minutes where they really looked equipped to win this game. And that in the end is not enough. I mean, obviously it is not enough, but I think with the possession they had, and they really played into Kaiserslautern's hands, that with the possession they had, they didn't really know what to do from time to time. Like, And Kaiserslautern was happy to take that, to intercept whatever they want to do, and just let Kiel do what they want until a certain time, and then just break through their barriers. And I mean, as you've mentioned before, Kaiserslautern, they play against St. Pauli, then at Paderborn, so this is probably for both teams is going to be a huge task, because Paderborn wants to be back in those top 3, period, and they need to win this game against Kaiserslautern to do so. And then obviously Greuther Fürth, where we don't know where they stand completely, but we definitely know what they can do, and it's Zorniger. And for Kiel, I mean, this is what I said before, they're not safe, but I do feel like that they're a team we don't have to worry about too much still, because they will pick up their points. This is just what they do. I mean, they could probably win against Magdeburg, lose against Braunschweig, and win against Paderborn. It would not surprise me, because this is what we said before. It's, for me, they're one of the most difficult teams to grasp, because they have a good coach, and they show good football, but only if they want to. And again, like in this game, for example, they just didn't want to show it for 90 minutes. We're like, okay, 1-1, fine with that. Let's close this. And obviously, Kaiserslautern wasn't happy with that. And for that, Kiel did 2 less in the second half.
I mean, the one thing that probably shocked me, and I know they were playing the system, the 3-4-3, and you've got, you know, Becker in particular, they seem to target him a bit. And, you know, we know that Riese loves to get forward. And to me, it felt as if that back three was heavily exposed by overlaps and combination plays. And I think, you know, Redondo didn't get as much of the plaudits for his performance. But the combination between the two attacking, you know, wide midfield players and the fullbacks being able to overlap, create those crossing angles, you know, they were potent. And you saw in the second half in particular, Zimmer and Suk were both in extraordinarily dangerous areas as to create crosses. And the defense, for some reason, you know, Boyd would be in one on two or three situations, and the ball would still get to Boyd, and he'd have those opportunities. And, you know, we may say that, you know, he should probably have more goals, which is a very fair assessment, but also a compliment that he gets into the right areas, gets those opportunities. And, you know, he did put a vital goal away, and it was enough to get them to the win. But, you know, this team is starting to feel a little bit more, this Kaiserslautern team is feeling a lot more dangerous now. And it might be because they've won 5 on the bounce, and we get that recency bias. But there's just something about them that makes you believe that they can actually make some, you know, they can do some damage. But, you know, their next few weeks will be mightily important if they can get some results against some teams that have hit form. All three of them have hit some form to start the new year. It's going to be fascinating. It really is going to be fascinating to see how they get on. Speaking of a team that is in form, let's talk about Paderborn, because we know that they ended 2022 on a 4-game losing streak, but they have started the new year on a 2-game winning streak. They were comprehensive winners at the home Deluxe Arena on Friday night, 4-1 against a very good Fortuna Düsseldorf side. This game, let me tell you, was not close. Paderborn were brilliant. They took advantage of their chances, and they were sensational, and they deserved their 3 points. Pieringer returned, he scored. The penalties, there were 2 of them in this game. I would say the first one was definitely a penalty. I have a really difficult time with the second one, the Karbovnik foul on Justvan. And I say foul because the angle we're shown live as well as on the replay, it melts my brain that I can't comprehend it. So the penalty goal was from Ruben Hennings for Dusseldorf. Yanis Hauer scored 3 minutes later, and then 6 minutes later, Muslia scored from the spot. Robert Leipert's got his 9th goal of the campaign. He's had an unbelievable season since leaving Heidenheim for Paderborn. He scored on 81 minutes, and a really good performance. They were very dangerous in all sorts of different attacking areas, and it seemed Dusseldorf really didn't have an answer defensively to combat this. And, you know, Paderborn now, they move up to 5th in the table, 32 points, 3 points behind Kaiserslautern. They've got that unbelievable goal difference. being that they are the top goal scorers in the division, the first to crack 40 after 19 games. It's very unusual that a team with so many goals, with such a positive goal difference as they do, plus 17, is not in the top three. But then you look at their win and losses, 10 wins, 2 draws and 7 losses. That explains everything for you. But on this night in particular, they were spectacular. They were very good. And they seem to be back to that early season form they produced, where they looked mightily dangerous in all facets of the game.
Yeah, I would fully agree. And I mean, Düsseldorf did something that a lot of teams against Paderborn do at some stage. They just give up. Like, they just fall into pieces. Like, if you compare that game to Düsseldorf games against Magdeburg, at some stage Düsseldorf realized, I mean, we're the better team, we have to win this. And there's an opponent who gives us the chances, but Paderborn was like, well, if you don't want to win, we take that win happily. I would agree with you on the penalty decision. I thought the pictures that were shown are not very clear. It more looks like a dive to me as well, and that there is no contact, but okay. Paderborn just always had the better start into both halves, even though they did not immediately score in the first half. It took them some time to score in the second half. But they always looked like they were more equipped, that they understood more was on the line. I think it was very, very important for them that just 3 minutes after the Hennings goal, they scored, just to put Düsseldorf in their place. But yeah, I mean, I think one of the players that is most frustrated at the moment is probably Felix Klaus. He already had tons of chances against Magdeburg, didn't score their one in the end, and he had tons of chances in this game as well. And like, not out of bad positions, they were all on target, but yeah, it was just not enough. And in the end, it was way too easy for Paderborn to win this game. I was a bit disappointed. And yeah, it seems like, I mean, we always say games against your immediate opponents are the ones where you have to win it so you can really finish the season on a high. I have no doubt that they got to be the best team against Sandhausen, against Braunschweig, but we have to ask the question whether it's going to be enough to stay in the promotion fight until the end. And I think as of now, we have to answer that with a nah, not really.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. There's another team we're going to talk about, start of Group 3, where we definitely, after their result, feel pretty, I would say, pretty similar. The ups and downs are too vast. Good teams, their best and worst are really close together, and you can kind of, they have that element of consistency. For Düsseldorf, at times, their best and their worst is so far apart, and a great microcosm of that was the second half. They just completely folded like a deck of cards. You know, you're at your most vulnerable to concede once you've scored. And, that was the case here. They just, I mean, the penalty was, in my opinion, from referee Tobias Reichel, was rubbish. But, you know, I'm sure he saw something that we didn't, and you know, we can only go by the pictures that are available, and yeah, I'm not convinced. But interesting is watching Paderborn's run throughout February. Hanover away, Kaiserslautern at home, Kiel away. Some pretty massive games. That Hanover game is a World Feed game on Saturday afternoon. And yeah, look, these are going to be some really good tests. We'll actually see where they really are at. And if they can take 6 points from the next 3 games, yeah, then we have to take them really seriously as a potential candidate for the playoffs. Whether they can close the gap to the top two, that remains to be seen. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we are going to discuss our Group 2 games, and we're going to start in Braunschweig, when Eintracht Braunschweig hosted Heidenheim. Heidenheim were hoping to keep up the pace with Hamburg and Darmstadt when they made the long journey north to Braunschweig to take on Eintracht, a game that many would have thought, on paper at least, Heidenheim should win. And they gave themselves a really good opportunity to do so in this encounter. However, there was one person in particular who had a point to prove after a very disappointing, and that's being kind, performance in Hamburg. Eintracht Braunschweig captain Jasmin Fasic played out of his skin, denying Heidenheim at every turn, chance after chance after chance. But Fasic was there to deny him, very much building a brick wall in front of the goal. It seemed as if this game might head to a goalless draw, but some magic from Manuel Winsheimer all but settled that it wasn't going to be the case. On 72 minutes, he opened the scoring. A wonderful through ball played to him, and in a situation where you'd think Patrick Mainka would have the advantage, Winsheimer threw his weight around, quite literally, took Mainka out of position, and beautifully finished it through the legs of Kevin Müller. They would eventually end the game on the 90. Winsheimer with a delicate ball to Leon Lauberbach. Lauberbach with an excellently controlled chested effort and then volleys the ball into the corner. Müller, absolutely no chance. And that's your game. Braunschweig in front of just under 17,000 people, scoring a vital home win. They are now 11th, and they were the biggest mover on match day 19, where they started in 16th place. This game was, it was cagey, because we all know the better chances absolutely fell the way of Heidenheim. But they just didn't have the magic touch. Fasic made multiple saves. There's a really good one late in the game where Kulvetter has the shot. It's not exactly the most convincing parry. It falls right to Schimmer, and again, you know, Fasic makes a really good reactionary save. But they just didn't have the formula. Let's just say they were looking through their spell book, but nothing worked.
Yep, and I mean, in a way, this was Heidenheim away from home, as we know them from last season, where they couldn't really bring that on the pitch, which we know what they could do. And I think it was, in a way, something we haven't seen from them this season so far in that way. At the same time, Nuremberg is probably going to be slightly irritated that there is someone who can score goals, but they gave him away to an opponent. Well, I do not know. He had a goal and an assist. Let's let him go to one of our opponents in the relegation fight. Clever, clever idea. Heads up to Nuremberg at this point. I mean, for Braunschweig, I think it was very, very important that when we came out of very dull first half, I think. You had the, as you've mentioned, the first chance through Bester, then you had the one scene for Braunschweig. I mean, it's also very frustrating to have 11 woodwork hits in a season, especially because it would have been a beautiful goal. What was to finish my point, they came out of this break, Heidenheim looked a bit better, but then Braunschweig scored, and then you had the feeling Heidenheim didn't do anything anymore. It looked a bit like we were criticizing them against Rostock already, that they didn't really find ways to break Rostock in for the majority of the game, and eventually wore them down. And I had the feeling that we're trying to do this in this game as well, but it just didn't work because then Braunschweig scored and Heidenheim didn't have anything to answer that. And I think, as mentioned before, those two games were probably one of the, it sounds weird because they lost, one of the worst games I've seen of Heidenheim this season, because like everything we know that they can do, especially what Beste can do in a game was just not really there. And I mean, it's not an ideal time for them to have that question mark behind their performances, because they play Hamburg in the top spiel on Saturday, and this is something, if they want to like keep up with the rest, they want to at least get a point out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, I think this was the one question mark we had about them going into the Rückrunde, was we know how great they're at home. We're aware, I think it's almost common knowledge at this point, but can they convert their opportunities away from home? And it seemed very unlikely anyway that, they should beat Braunschweig. You know, they've got the metrics, the numbers suggest this should be quite comfortable. And the longer the game progressed, they actually made things more uncomfortable for themselves. I think a lot of the credit has to go with the defense for Braunschweig, where they're banged up. Their regulars in Brian Behrendt and Filip Benkovic are out. Sula Dekarli, who we have not seen what feels like forever, and also 18-year-old Linus Gechter, who's on loan from Hertha, along with Nathan Di Medina. It doesn't, on paper, that doesn't seem the most threatening defense, but this defense kept a clean sheet against one of the best teams in the league, and they were resilient. They had to overcome a lot of adversity, a lot of offensive attacks. But we talk about the competitive state of games, and you know, Braunschweig, when the chance came, from their, you know, you think about it, their most dangerous attacks led to goals, and they came off turnover. They went the other way quickly. They got the Vinsheimer one goal. It was essentially a one-on-one with Mainka. He beat Mainka, and that was it. And the second one, turnover in the final third, Kulvetta just hanging onto the ball for too long. Straza does well, and then just the Vinsheimer ball was so beautiful. It was delicate. Voila. Chef's kiss. And the finish was even more delightful. But question is, can they... They've got a tough game coming up, Braunschweig. They've got Darmstadt. That is the other World Food game. That's on Sunday afternoon, local time. Heidenheim, yeah, Hamburg on the top spieler, then Nürnberg and Armenia Bielefeld. But it will be interesting to see where these two land at the end of the month. Speaking of Hamburg, let's talk about them. They were on the road to Rostock. And, this game was weird. This game really shouldn't have felt as close as it was, and then it felt like that they shouldn't have been winning. And regardless, Hamburg took the 3 points in the end. Goals from Ludovic Rice on 40 minutes, and that was just... I don't know what the hell Rostock were trying to do, but it wasn't clear the ball, I can tell you that. And Rice was more than obliging to put the ball in the back of the net. There was an unbelievable scene early in the second half where Van Drongelen nearly heads the ball into his own net. Ball comes out. Königsdorfer somehow misses, hits a defender, hits the goalkeeper. Glatzel puts it out to Dompe, who was good in this game without any sort of result. And that third save from Kolke was out of this world. To be essentially on the ground, to come up, get a hand up, parry it onto the crossbar, and then retain the ball. I don't think it's garnered any sort of appreciation. At least I haven't seen any. But that is so hard to do, because when you're on the deck and you've got to immediately rise like a dolphin heading up of the water, you need momentum and you have to be such decisive, because Dompe hit that first time. And 9 out of 10, the odds of him missing from where he was are so minimal. The fact that he was able to intercept that was outstanding. They had two goals disallowed as well. Svane Engelsson, that one I can see. The second one I'm having a hard time with, and I'm sure I've explained it in my notes. So Jean Verhoek was obviously offside. Yunus David, he plays the ball, and the ball comes to Verhoek, and he scores, and they didn't even look at it. So I'm assuming that even though he played the ball, he wasn't in possession. But I'm confused because I feel like we've seen this scene before and it's been given as a goal, and in this instance it's not. But from my interpretation of the rules, because he didn't have clear possession, it was more like a deflection. It was given as offside. Eva, you're gonna have to help me out of this one. Because to me, I would like to see that as he's played the ball. I'd like to see that as he's played him onside and the goal should have stood. But that's just personal opinion.
Yeah, I think it's a bit difficult because when I saw this scene, I was reminded of when Bielefeld played Bayern 2 years ago, and they had Bielefeld scored the fourth goal, which meant they would have won against Bayern, but it was disallowed because I think Cordoba and Bayern player both go up to the ball. And it's not, first of all, it's not clear who plays the ball. But then I think Klose or someone else is offside. Mm. And there were a lot of discussion because, in my opinion, it's not deliberate play because obviously there is a ball and you have to go to it and there are two players and you don't really know who's really touching the ball first. But I think, and in a way, obviously, David has to intercept the ball in a way, but it's not the ball isn't going into a deliberate direction. It's always difficult to say that when with like a ball like this who touches the head. Mm. And obviously he has the rest of the field in his back, so he doesn't really see that there is Verhoek in his back. So I think it's very like a very very gray line, but I would say in the end that you can it always depends what the referee calls first on the pitch in that scene. This is what I would say, and then you can't really overrule it. This would be my opinion here, and if the if the discussion afterwards was with the VAR shortly, I've seen it was David who played the ball, but I'm fine with it. Doesn't seem like deliberate play, so it's still offside to me. We kind of have to accept it. But yeah, I mean, once again, this was a game where Hamburg just was nearly their own downfall because they just don't use their chances how they should. At the same time, still a very frustrating game for Rostock fans in particular after the Heidenheim game. They didn't play badly in that way, but obviously at some stage Hamburg has just the quality to get it done, and especially for the first goal, as you've mentioned. It's just lack of quality in defending. At the same time, I think we have to touch on Dompé, who is in talks with HSV because he wasn't involved in an illegal straight race. Don't know why it's still happening, and it feels like Hamburg, whenever they feel so close, so comfortable, like never before, to finally get promoted, and you have one player who's positive after use pills, then you have always that whole scenario with everyone in the back, president and stuff, and now you have this. I feel for Hamburg fans. It's not going to be easy. But yeah, in the end, good result for Hamburg, and obviously means that them and Darmstadt, with Darmstadt's results as well, which we're going to talk about later, puts them in a very comfortable position, especially because the next three games, at least two out of them, they definitely want to win, with Heidenheim against and Darmstadt, just to obviously they want to win all three, but because it's against immediate opponents, direct opponents in this promotion fight.
I mean, obviously the next games are vital for them, and trying to maximize their point output will be quite clear. I mean, the situation off the field just, someone's been playing too much Need for Speed. I think that's pretty clear, and thought they could do that. I think there was another player involved, but Dom Pays was the car that crashed, the BMW M4. Maybe we'll talk about the positives, and that is their new signing, Andras Nemeth, opened his account. He scored late in this game. A nice little tap in to get off the mark is always always welcomed for the striker. But yeah, Heidenheim, Bielefeld, Darmstadt, two of those games are World Feed games. The Heidenheim game, surprisingly, is not. Rostock, they've got Bielefeld on Friday night at away. Then they've got Darmstadt and then St. Pauli. It's a tough old run. And the second worst attacking team in the league. They look very vulnerable going forward. Let's talk about Arminia Bielefeld because, well, they've had, let's just say, some real struggles travelling away from the Alm this season. They take on a Jan Regensburg side that is in absolute freefall. And let's just see how it played out. They had a pretty decent crowd. I think that crowd number seems wrong. But anyway, that definitely seems wrong. I made a mistake in the note. There's definitely not that many people that went to that game. I'm not even sure that stadium. I'm not even sure the stadium fits.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, no, I obviously missed that.
8,560 people were.
Yeah, that seems definitely a bit more on the nose because I don't think the Jahn Stadion even can hold that many. Yeah, I didn't think so. All right, let's talk about the game and not my clear error. See, Jakov Medic, I've got one in me. Regensburg started the game very positively. They opened the scoring just 2 minutes into the game. Sarpreet Singh's corner finding Jan Elvedi. I think Frazel was a bit too occupied with Yildirim and didn't really get himself in a good position. But Bielefeld got that goal back pretty quickly. It's a good ball into the box. Elvedi tries to clear, and it's, Jesus, good finish from Vasiliadis. Comes in at the back post. He beats Singh, who's trying to track back, and just a first-time volley. And the team's going 1-1 at the break. It's a bit of a weird second half. Both teams are kind of like, they're prodding, but no one's really landing a punch. And Jan thought they had the lead. 76 minutes in, it was another set piece. Elvedi again to head in, but good use of the referee, the VAR intervening to let Sven Vashitsky Gunter know that Elvedi and virtually all of the Regensburg players were offside in that situation. So the offside trap working rarely for the first time for Bielefeld. And then, Jan just completely had a meltdown. The first goal is some Kreisliga defending, if I've ever seen it. It's great for fans of Bielefeld, and it's great for Fabian Klose because he's been banged up. He wanted to come back. This was a big thing that he's going to come back to Bielefeld. He's going to be out. Everything, the good times are going to roll, and he's been hurt to hell and back. He comes on as a second half sub. And I don't understand. Someone help me understand it. How five Regensburg players do not spot a guy wearing a face mask. I don't understand it. Anyway, Brian Lasmer, who should get some credit here after being, we spoke about him the week before. He does so well to keep the play alive, loops a ball in, and, you know, Fabian Klose, who hasn't got a goal this season until then, he probably couldn't have asked for an easier goal than that. It was beautiful. So 2-1, you're thinking, that's it. You don't think that Regensburg could stoop even lower in their defensive output, and then you would be wrong. Because Klose would score again. And this one was much more impressive of a goal. It's a beautiful set piece. I think it was Robin Hux who took it. Maximilian Tauhammer, his controller disconnects, then reconnects. Klose gets a great header from essentially inside the edge of the box. And Jonas Urbig, who is trying. I don't know why people are criticizing him. It was just such a perfectly placed header. Klose makes it 2 in 5 minutes. And that's your game. Bielefeld now 13th. Lucky for some, not others. Regensburg in the bottom two for the very first time this season. and the small community of Regensburg fans are questioning whether Mirsad Selimbegovic should be sent packing. We'll talk about Bielefeld first, and then I'll touch on Regensburg. But after last week's debacle, misstep, disappointment, this was a much-needed result. We talked about it last week, about how vital it was for Bielefeld to get a result in Regensburg. It wasn't always easy, but, you know, all three of their goals came in very similar fashions, getting the ball out wide, players in the box, put the ball in the back of the net, and when the chances came for Bielefeld in those situations, they were very much able to take them.
Yeah, I mean, the thing was that this is actually the first time they've turned a game around to win it since, do you know it?
No.
September 2019 against Wien Wiesbaden.
Oh, wow. Rudiger Rehm gets a mention this week. Amazing. He got sacked as well last weekend, so funny that. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, but it looked like everyone was looking at each other like, this is starting off great. Like, this is definitely what we wanted. But you got to say, like, for example, compared to the game against Magdeburg, we saw some proper football. And I mean, second goal in 2 weeks from after a set piece. I mean, what the hell did they do to them in the break? This is not my Bielefeld. No, and obviously it's, in my opinion, was a deserved one because Bielefeld, like, Regensburg was dangerous through set pieces in the first half.
Yeah.
Singh really had an impact there, and then they had the one chance with where Freiser is there against Witzinger. Mm. But the rest of the game, they were not really threatening Bielefeld in that way. And so I thought it was a deserved win for Bielefeld in the end. Obviously, I'm biased there, but yeah, I mean, I was a bit surprised to see Freisel in the team of the week and not Fasic, full kicker. Probably, like, I could understand if it would have been Fasic instead or Kolke, just because Freisel had that one really good save. It was quite funny when Regensburg scored. Obviously, they, as you mentioned, had the offside goal, and Freisel afterwards, like, celebrated like Bielefeld just scored a goal. Bit embarrassing, but yeah. And yeah, I think when Klose scored that goal, you can really see that the whole team, like, everyone ran on the pitch with still like 6 minutes to go, was very happy. And yeah, but I said it before, I'm going to say it again. They have 3 wins out of their last 4 games. But it does not mean anything if they don't win against Hansa Rostock on Friday night. And it's going to be a very, very tough game. I mean, it would be a good start to have a game without conceding a goal, maybe. Nice for home fans. Just a quick recap for that. But yeah, we're going to see how this is going to go.
Yeah, I'll just say clean sheets are overrated if you can't score goals. So, yeah. Yeah, that's well. I can give you my unbiased opinion. Yeah, they deserve to win. Bielefeld were the better team. Regensburg are where we thought they would be. They've been like Augsburg for many years but the Zweite Bundesliga equivalent, in that they just keep dodging the bottom two and playing well above their capabilities. And I find it very hard to understand why, you know, this is surprising. Then they're just not a good team, and they haven't been for so long. The years where they had Heiko Herrlich getting them up, and then the 2 years of Bielorts where they finished mid-table, very much seem outliers to where they really were at. They had some really good players that you know, turned into better. They went elsewhere. Guys like Alexander Meyer, Max Bishushkov, Hamidi Agadoui. You know, it was a team that was playing well above what it really was and what it really is. So I don't understand. I understand the frustration with Selim Begovic, but it makes no sense at this point to sack him when you should have sacked him during the winter break. He's out of contract, I believe, at the end of the season. So there's even less impetus for them to sack him now. And, you know, if they wanted to do it, they would have already done it. But then who's on the coaching market? Who wants to take that team and try and keep them up? And it makes sense for a coach to do that. And I'm sure there are coaches out there, but off the top of my head, I couldn't see one. So, you know, as harsh as that is, that's the reality. They are where I think a lot of us thought they would be right now, which is in the bottom two. And that's where they're, you know, that's where they are. And if they lose at Nuremberg, Hanover's going to be a tough game. And then Karlsruhe, who bloody knows what that could be like. Maybe they make a change then, but who's to say that the new manager bounce will kick for them? No one really knows. It's a mystery, but I'm just bewildered by the constant commentary of almost thinking that they're a lot better than they really are. And we need to be a bit realistic of who they are and what they are. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the final three games, and we're going to start at the Milan Tour when St. Pauli hosted Hanover. Two sides that had contrasting fortunes on match day 18 were St. Pauli and Hanover. Hanover beaten by Kaiserslautern at home, St. Pauli tasting a victory for the first time in a long time away at Nuremberg. How would the fortunes differ? Well, St. Pauli, well, they came out firing a front three of Dapo Afolayan, Lucas Daschner, and Connor Metcalf. Well, they were brilliant, outstanding, dynamic, and when they got the ball to those three, good things happen. That's how the goal came about. Dapo Afolayan, who of course joined from Bolton Wanderers, playing in League One in English football, he looks really comfortable already at this level. And he makes a great run. His initial effort is parried by Ron Robert Zila. Zila's parry was... well, he couldn't have parried it to any worse area because Lucas Daschner was there to feast. And feast he did. And his fourth goal of the season. 10 minutes later, they doubled their advantage. But without... you know, there was a bit of iffiness about it. Initially, it looked like Connor Metcalf was offside. But he wasn't, and he just produced such a delicate finish. Hit the finesse button when you play FIFA, EA FC as it will be next season, but wonderful left foot ball, and it hit the top corner, and Zila, he tried, but he wasn't good enough. I think there was a tactical misstep as well. Phil Neumann, who was clearly getting a bit angry as the game progressed, had a yellow card in the first half. Probably should have subbed him off at halftime. We see that in cup games where they sub players with cards off to make sure they've got 11. But Neumann, who'd been agitated throughout the game, he fouls Afolayan. He gets sent off. The game's pretty much dust by then. St. Pauli thought they had a third. It was Metcalf to Daschner. But eventually that was chalked off for offside because Metcalf was offside. So 3 4 points for St. Pauli. They are now ninth. It's been the perfect start for Fabian Hützler. Whereas for Hanover, they're in trouble. They might be falling away from the contenders, and that idea of we're going to get promoted in the first season under Stefan Leitl is very much becoming empty words and nothing more. We should talk about St. Pauli, but we won't talk about them tactically because one of the journos, Tim Eckstein, asked about some of the tactical questions of Hützler, and it was not greeted friendly enough, but they seem to have a bit more cohesion in the front, in the final third. The combination of Afolayan coming in the winter has really added a lot of life into the team, and they look so much more dynamic in that final third, which is something that we were concerned about at the start of the season. If this continues, then there's certainly more hope and optimism that they can continue to push a gap to those below them.
Yeah, and I thought that it was, I mean, they could have had one or two goals more. They looked very confident in this game. Obviously, after the second yellow, as you've mentioned, that completely killed Hannover's game, and it was only the Pauli afterwards. But yeah, some very good combinations as well. I don't know if we probably have to talk about Metz and Medic versus Bayer. Could have been a penalty as well, especially if you look at the penalty that was given against in Düsseldorf against Paderborn. But yeah, it looks like St. Pauli is slowly back on track, and for Hannover, something happened that we were wondering about, whether that we didn't really believe that they were up to the task. And after two games, we have to say those are two games, especially this game, you don't want to lose, and it's not getting easier with them playing against Paderborn on the weekend. So yeah, they definitely don't want to look completely useless in that game, because then they play against Regensburg and Magdeburg, and those are two games in which position they stand, they definitely want to win.
Yeah, no question. And with how there's starting to be a definable gap between the top two, and then there are teams now starting to linger towards Heidenheim, every point is going to be vital. We know that there's going to be points dropped in between, but when you've got an opponent who is still kind of figuring things out, but ultimately I think St. Pauli are a team that actually used the break to their advantage. We know, we mentioned it last week, wasn't a popular decision, but the results don't lie at the moment. You know, you can use any sort of footballing idiom that's been used by coaches over and over again. The results don't lie. They're ninth now. Two wins and everything looks good again. So, yeah, I mean, St. Pauli got a pretty tough task on Sunday. They're home to Kaiserslautern. That actually seems like it could be a really interesting game. And then they've got Magdeburg away and then they've got Rostock at home. So some real heavy police presence games coming up for St. Pauli. Safe travels regardless. So, it's going to be interesting to see how both teams go. I mean, Hannover really, they're going to have to beat Paderborn if we're going to take them seriously. If not, that'll be winless in four, and maybe the pitchforks will come out. Let's talk about the league leaders. We've left them pretty late. They took on Sandhausen on Friday night. This was a 4-0 win for the visitors, a brace for Matthias Honsack. He did that again last night in their 4-2 cup loss at Eintracht Frankfurt, which was... yeah, I don't know how they got two goals in that game, but it made it more interesting than it was. Oscar Willemsen and Emir Karic also getting on the score sheet. I think it's become a theme, because the numbers do tell quite the story with a lot of their performances. It's not spectacular. They usually lose a lot of the stats, some of the stats that they're in, but they're efficient in front of goal. They take their chances. And I think it was a great microcosm of where both Darmstadt and Sandhausen are, where Sandhausen did create those chances through Esfine. Çalhanoğlu was good on the left. Like, they were creating chances, didn't convert them. Bang, 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 in a moment, the game was gone and Darmstadt were looking comfortable.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing you don't want to do as Sandhausen against Darmstadt is concede too many set pieces by Darmstadt. And they weren't really having that. All in all, I think this is one of the games where I think the score sheet in the end is too high, because as you've mentioned, Sandhausen showed some good effort, but what I liked about them is that they never gave up, but they just didn't use their chances very well. Agatoui, probably the first person to name here. And then Darmstadt is just in a mood to completely roll over you at the moment. As you mentioned, even Frankfurt had to get a piece of that last night. But in the end, for Sandhausen, it's not going to get easier anytime soon, with them playing Düsseldorf and Karlsruhe and Nuremberg. So they're still there. And this is where, I mean, if you win one game, it doesn't, you have to keep going, obviously. Even before the game, it was clear this is not the probably not the game where you expect them to win, but especially games against Karlsruhe and Nuremberg aren't going to be the ones where you want to look out as Antalya fan.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's an appreciation that they're very realistic of where they need to pick the points up. It was always going to be tough against Darmstadt. They were well aware of that. And it obviously didn't help where the situations required them to score. They weren't able to. And Darmstadt are so prolific in front of goal that if you miss, they'll hit. And this was another case of that. On the weekend, Darmstadt, they host Braunschweig. As we mentioned, that is the World Feed game on Sunday afternoon. And finally, let's head to Magdeburg. They hosted Karlsruhe. Two sides who are in desperate need of 3 points. This game perfectly encapsulated where both teams are, where, you know, Magdeburg made tons of opportunities. They had lots of the ball. Didn't do a whole lot with it. They conceded early, which was just a mess defensively. Sebastian Jung getting his first goal of the season. Vanitek finds him. Ito doesn't run back. It's too late to the danger. Jung very, very calm and collected in putting the ball in the back of the net. Some of the better chances did actually fall to Karlsruhe. Vanitek had a number of chances in this game that he probably should have scored, and was maybe a little bit unfortunate. You know, the ball not bouncing the right way for him. And it certainly seemed as the game progressed that Magdeburg weren't going to get a goal. It just didn't seem it like they were going to have the lucky charm, but they did eventually break through. It was a set piece. It wasn't pretty. It fell to Daniel Elfadali, and Elfadali put the ball in the back of the net. It was just a little deft touch on the ball, and it was enough to roll the ball into the back of the net. So Magdeburg gets the point. They do stay bottom. Karlsruhe, it's a point. The pressure is really on Christian Eichner. There were weird rumors about him yesterday being in the mix for the Hoffenheim job, which makes no sense based on what's been going on in Karlsruhe. They've got Fürth, Regensburg, and before that they've got Sandhausen. Like, three games against teams that are around you. This is going to be, like, it's a massive month ahead for them. But we should also talk about Magdeburg, because there were scenes after the game where they'd scored, they got the draw. They, as is often, you know, it doesn't happen in English football, but it happens perfectly well in German football. You go win, lose, or draw to your fanzine, clap, or you receive the taunts. In this case, the block U, they were throwing taunts at the Magdeburg players, and then Tietz told the players to go back to the dressing room, and that obviously provoked more boo. So even though Tietz did re-sign during the winter break, it's fair to say that all is not well in Magdeburg. And even though they've shown in a lot of games this season that they're more than up to being competitive in this league, they make bad defensive mistakes, they have to work extra hard to get something. And in this case, they did get the result, but even still, it feels like they didn't do enough. They didn't achieve enough, considering the output in this game.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of overreaction, because it wasn't that Magdeburg was bad in this game. Mm. They were just a bit unlucky, and they're still a promoted side, like, chill. And I don't think that's just the way to go, especially with the games that are coming up. Like, if they're already disappointed now, what's going to happen if they, like, don't win in the last three? And that's something that can really kill the vibe at Magdeburg. I don't think that was the way to go. At the same time, Karlsruhe was just doing Karlsruhe things. Like, I mean, they had the chance to score the 2-0. In the end, they just don't look good. And as you mentioned, teams like against Fürth, Sandhausen, and Regensburg, difficult weeks ahead as well. And at this point, I don't really know what to say about them anymore.
Yeah, I think they are probably one of three teams that I look at, Nuremberg and Regensburg, who should probably be assessing their situation. Again, as I said, if you were going to make a decision, you would have made it during the break to give the new gaffer some time, like St. Pauli did. And St. Pauli are seeing that what spending 10 weeks and figuring it out does, because you have to question with all three of those managers, what the hell did you do in the break? Like, clearly nothing, because nothing's really working. And, you know, this month, if neither side, if you can't take results here, it's, you just don't know when those results are going to come. Especially, we talk about it every week. We've talked about it ad nauseum today in the podcast. You have to beat the teams around them. And that was another case. Both sides guilty of this. And who knows, you know, Magdeburg's next three, Kiel, St. Pauli, Hanover, they now seem like tougher tests than they might have been had they been able to get a result on the weekend. Before we go, we like to always take stock of our kick tip, and it's fair to say this was a very tight week in the tipping. It didn't look like it was going to be high scoring at all, but many got their points on Sunday. Alex, Ainarino, Deluxe, and El Breezy, 96. All top scored with 17. Alex still leads with 210 points. Congratulations to all of our weekly winners. And that will do us for the week. Thank you for listening once again to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. It's always appreciated that you give us the support to talk about our favorite league. Thank you so much. We wish you a fantastic weekend of Zweite Bundesliga football, and we will be back on Wednesday to do it all again. Until then, stay safe and have a good week.